sit back, stand idly by, watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my bone, don't tread on my guts, don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I damn sure fight for my liberty. Telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand, spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends, gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns, don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey everybody, welcome back into the show. Second hour here on this Friday, August 8th, 2025 edition. Your Defending Fathers with Trucker Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us on the line, as usual, in this second hour every Friday, Pastor Chatfield coming on with a history lesson discussion. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, before we get started, did you have an opportunity to hear my interview with Jesse over in Onaway this morning?
Actually, not. I've been up all night. We're in a 24-hour prayer for America, for our president, for revival, for souls to be saved. And so, no. But I will get to it, but not today. I took an hour off to do the interview, and I told, you know, so that's what I'm doing. So
that's what you're doing today. Well, we greatly appreciate you guys doing that. I forgot the prayer vigil was this evening, or actually started last night, went through the night, and you guys took the early morning shift.
And midnight to midnight is what it goes. Preachers, churches all over the country praying. One continual telephone conference call. So it's been going now for 10 hours. So we've got another 14 hours to go.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we appreciate you guys doing that for sure. You texted me this, actually late last night, a survey of the development of political parties in America is the lesson plan you'd like to discuss with us today.
Right, I'm doing this strictly from memory. I'm sitting in my car, strictly from memory. But George Washington really didn't like what he called the spirit of party. He was kind of above it. He loved our country, and he didn't like it. In his farewell address, he said, "I don't like this, the development of spirit of party." Now Madison, who basically most historians think that Madison was the really helped him write that farewell address. Maybe I'm not a ghostwriter exactly, but he really helped with that. Madison, Hamilton, Jefferson, they could see it coming. Political parties are just in human nature. Political parties are alliances, coalitions that people build with others in order to get legislation passed. When it comes to politics, legislation passed. When it comes to war, to win a war, you form an army. Countries don't. You can't win an army with guerrilla warfare. And you can harass the other ones, but you can't win. You got to be organized. So political parties is built into the very nature of human beings. Free countries will have political parties. It's just a natural development, which we wish it didn't have to happen. But division, disagreements, arguments, coalition building, one side or the other. It's the nature of things. It's the nature of politics. It's the nature of voting. When you have a legislative body and it takes 56 votes to get something passed, say in Michigan, you got to build coalitions, and you got to get everybody on the same page somehow. Either you woo them, you threaten them, you deny them their desk, something that you get legislation passed. And there's different ways of going about it, but that's the nature of things. And so you build parties, and people that are part of parties sometimes vote for things where they have to hold their nose, and we'll talk about that on the other side.
Absolutely. Perfect spot for a break. Pastor Chet Field, Trucker Randy, we're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.
Road Trip, the Good Words Book for Success by Rick Randall, is the perfect book that will change the way that you think and will positively impact your life. 123 good words, motivational, inspirational definitions, and packed with very cool poems for each word, is a readable experience that you will visit time and time again. Available on Amazon Books and Barnes & Noble, Road Trip, Likely to Succeed, makes the perfect graduation gift. Enjoy reading Road Trip, Likely to Succeed A to Z, the Good Words Book for Success by Rick Randall.
Gunsmith in Petoskey wants to ask you a question. Have you exercised your Second Amendment rights lately? Well, if you haven't, get on over to Curtis Gunsmith in Petoskey and talk to the old gun doctor about purchasing your next firearm, whether that be a concealed carry firearm or maybe an AR-15, perhaps an AK-47, or even just an old lever action. The gun doctor also works on every kind of firearm, except maybe an Abrams tank. So you know your baby's in good hands. Curtis Gunsmith. Call 231-838-5571.
Hey everybody, it's Trucker Randy, the Yo-Yo Diet King. I have literally lost hundreds of pounds in my life. SlimFast in the 90s, Nutrisystem in 2000, South Beach, Superfoods, they all worked in the short term, only to gain it all back, plus some. Now that I'm 65, I really wanted to find a program that would increase my metabolism to burn my belly fat, bring my hormones back to my younger days without any exercising. Then I met Missy, a MyPure Health Solutions. She explained how her program does exactly what I was looking for. Go to TruckerRandyHealth.com. Follow my journey with Missy and see that I dropped 22 pounds of body fat in the first 14 days without exercising and eating real foods. Again, go to TruckerRandyHealth.com and schedule a free consultation or call Missy at 269-964-4044. Let Missy change your metabolism just like she's changed mine. Do it today.
Life is a wonderful journey, from fresh beginnings and future adventures to all the best life has to offer. Along this incredible journey, you want to safeguard what's most important to you. Hi, I'm Tristan Cole, your local Farm Bureau insurance agent, and I'm always nearby to help protect you and your loved ones along the way. Let's talk about your journey and protecting what matters most. Call me at 231-533-6489 or visit me online at TristanCole.com. We're Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
LegendarySystems.net now offers affordable remote tech support for your computer, the same service that large companies have been using for years. To discuss your needs and pricing, call us at 231-818-8349. Don't take your computer in for repairs. Let us do it remotely. Again, call us today at 231-818-8349.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of our discussion with Pastor Chet Field. Sir, we'll let you pick it up right where you left off.
Really, the beginning of political parties in the United States started to form during the Constitutional Convention. I think everybody agreed, hey, the Articles of Confederation had to be strengthened. So in 1787, they meet, and they were drawing up the Constitution, And people like George Mason from Virginia, Patrick Henry from Virginia, were two of the leaders that were that became known as the Anti-Federalist. It's not even, they were pegged with that name. Truly, they were the Federalist, and the Federalists should have been called the Nationalists, but they call themselves the Federalists. And here was the argument. How much power should go to the federal government? The Patrick Henry, George Mason, they wanted, yes, they wanted a new constitution. True, the Articles of Confederation had to be strengthened, but they did not want a powerful central government at all. Initially, on the other side, it was Alexander Hamilton and James Madison that wanted a stronger central government. And a lot of the arguments in the Constitutional Convention, especially the big argument, how would the legislation be, or how would the legislature be comprised? We ended up having, you know, a compromise, as much of our Constitution was, between the small states in the large states. The large states says, well, we want representation based totally on population. It's called the Virginia Plan. The smaller states, led by New Jersey, said, no, 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 equal representation among the states. And the convention was about ready to split until we came up with what was known as the Connecticut Compromise. Let's have two houses, the Senate based on, you know, equal representation among the states, two senators from each state, and the House of Representatives, the more people you have, the more representation you get. But you could see people, especially Hamilton, he wanted a stronger central government. He had a vision of a economic power. Hamilton was not even against having a heredity be a king or a president based on heredity. Whereas Jefferson, no way, no way, no way. And Washington settled that. He didn't want to be called king. He said, we don't want no kings. Okay, that's what I get to say, no kings. But Alexander Hamilton was not totally against it, because the more federal power you had, the more stability you would have. The less federal power, the less stability. And that proved to be true. And we'll get to the Civil War. So even in the Constitutional Convention, there was, should there be more power to the federal government, the national government, or less? Now, once we adopted the Constitution, 1787, ratified by the states completely, all of them, by 1789, minus Rhode Island, who never, it took them a decade to adopt it. So you had that. Now, within the cabinet of George Washington, you had the Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, you had the Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson, and they were at odds with each other. And Washington was trying to play the peacemaker. He kind of sided more with Hamilton, and therefore he was known as a Federalist president, as was John Adams. Kind of more federal power, whereas Jefferson wanted more state power. And by this time, the idea of more power to the federal government in the mind of James Madison went too far, so he shifted back toward Jefferson. So Jefferson, Madison were what we call the Republicans, or the National Democratic Republicans, later known as the National Republicans. Yeah, it's going to be hard to follow this. The Federalists was Washington and Hamilton and Adams. And so the first two administrations were federal. After the Alien Sedition Acts, the country said, whoa, 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 we don't think that we're going to throw people in jail and arrest people for printing things because of the Alien Sedition Acts. And the country swung the other direction toward what they called themselves the Republicans. Jefferson, you call him a Jeffersonian Republican or Jeffersonian or Democratic Republican. They won with Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe. After Adams, the Federalists never won another presidential election. It got to the point when Monroe became president It became known as the Era of Good Feeling. The Federalist Party had all but dissolved. And so what had happened then, you had just the Republican Party. Or you had what were called National Republicans, which was John Quincy Adams. John Quincy Adams left the Party of the Federalists, which was his dad's party, and called himself a National Republican. And eventually the National Republicans morphed into what became known as the Whig Party. And the Democratic Republicans became what was known as the Democratic Party. With the election of Andrew Jackson in 1828, you had the Democrats. And Jackson, if you want to criticize him, he was a... a demagogue, if you want to, but he was for the common man. Jackson was for the common man. He didn't like banks. He didn't like. I mean, he was for the common man, and so that's who he was. And the people that opposed Jackson became known as Whigs. They were simply Whigs. And what united the Whig Party? Opposition to Jackson. That's what united the Whig Party. Nothing else. So
interesting point on that. Donald Trump has a picture of Andrew Jackson in his Oval Office, and other presidents, of course. But kind of interesting that you mentioned that common man. So do you think that Andrew Jackson was really the first president that we had that really aligned himself and wanted to be known as the president of the common man versus the federal elitist group? Is that what you're basically saying at that point in time?
Yes. And understand this. These things, there's not a straight line here in all these issues. It's not a straight line.
Sure.
By the 1850s, the Whig Party, they won one election, but it didn't win a lot. But it was falling apart. The Whig Party was falling apart, and there was a new party. There was a bunch of new parties. The Free Soil Party, the American Party, the anti-Mason Party. I mean, there were all sorts of different parties. And the Democrats, under Jackson, they kind of stayed the same. The Democrats, first with Jackson, then Van Buren, they were the party of the common man. They became the party of the cities. It was in the 1840s when you first began the great influx of immigrants into the cities. And in the 1840s, there was a potato famine in Ireland. And a lot of Irish people came over to Boston and to New York. Boston and New York were once very conservative, Protestant, Federalist territory. But with the influx of all these Europeans, they just naturally went to the Democratic Party. And the cities, since the 1840s, 1850s, they've been that way. Cities are Democrat. Rural areas are Republican. And so that was just by the nature of things. Now, the Republicans, the first Republican president, you know, was Abraham Lincoln, elected in 1860. His policy was this. He wanted high tariffs. He wanted what was called he supported Henry Clay's American system. He wanted high tariffs with the money collected for tariffs to build internal improvements so that we would basically trade with ourselves, and we would protect American industry and build up American jobs. That was Abraham Lincoln. Plus, he wanted to restrict the enlargement of slavery. Those are the two things that Lincoln was for. High tariffs, well, three. High tariffs, American system, and against the spread of slavery. Now, that was the Republican Party. Now, a small part of the Republican Party were the abolitionists. The abolitionists wanted the immediate abolition of slavery. Lincoln did not. He didn't want it because it was political suicide in 1860, and he always distanced himself from being called an abolitionist. When John Brown did his raid there in West Virginia, Harper's Ferry, he distanced himself very much from John Brown, who's trying to have a slave rebellion. No. John Brown, here's what he said. John Brown was no Republican. The Democrats were trying to tag the Republicans as being what they call black Republicans and supporters of John Brown. You see, they're going to try to have a slave rebellion throughout the South. And that was John Brown's raid really hurt the Republican Party because it was fanatical. And Lincoln did not believe in that. He hated slavery and thought it was wrong, but he read the Constitution and said he had no right to do that. All he wanted to do, and this is a political calculation, was to restrict the territorial enlargement of slavery. Now, on the other side, you have the Democrats, the extremists on the other side, they wanted earlier to secede from the Union. They wanted to transplant slavery to Mexico, new territories, new states, Mexico, and all South America. They dreamed of a gigantic place that would where slaves would be in the entire southern hemisphere of the Americas. And so the Democrats were solid pro-slavery. And they were anti-tariff because there weren't that many factories in the South. So the tariff tax on goods coming into the country would hurt them more than it would the North, because a lot of Northern industries liked a tariff because it would protect their industry, which we call it a protective tariff, and it would support them in a way that their goods would be more competitive to goods coming from foreign markets. Some people in the South they miscalculated. They thought if they seceded from the Union that France and England, especially the textile mills in England, would so need the cotton that they would support and recognize the Confederacy. As a matter of fact, they thought that if they stopped shipping cotton to England, then England would be so hurt that they would recognize the Confederacy. Now, that they miscalculated.
Yeah, absolutely.
It didn't happen that way.
Right. Now, let me ask you this question, because the Secretary of Treasury yesterday, Scott Bessent, said that tariffs go all the way back to Alexander Hamilton, that Hamilton was the first proponent of tariffs, of a way to fund the federal government and to protect American industry. So then we have Abraham Lincoln, and we've had other presidents as well. Totally.
Pro-tariff.
Yes.
But this is not a straight line. What I mean by that, 30 years ago, the only guy that talked like this was Pat Buchanan.
Yes.
The Republican Party was free trade. That's all they argued. Free trade.
Right.
George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, they were free trade Republicans. They thought, and we'll talk about that on the other side.
Absolutely. Pick it up right there when we get back. Family Hour News of hour number 2, history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield. I'm Chuck Randy. We'll be right back.
This is Michigan News Source.